Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Legal for Landlords, Rent Arrears and Right to Rent webinar. So without further ado, I'm going to get this started. Okay, today in terms of introduction, I'm Sim Sekon, MD of Legal for Landlords, and in a nutshell, we are the complete provider to the letting industry for insurances, references and legal services. The format of today's webinar, for those who haven't been on a webinar, you'll be able to hear myself speaking for the next 30 minutes or so, and you can ask questions at any time via the online panel, so just type in the questions there, and I'll try and answer as many questions as I go along throughout the whole presentation. Otherwise, if there's any questions that I don't answer or that we haven't got time for, I'll endeavour to respond to all questions in due course. So you'll be able to hear me, I can't hear you, and I'm just going to go through it as slowly as possible. So today we're going to be covering rent arrears and right to rent. So rent arrears quite pertinent as it's been Christmas and a lot of tenants, a majority of tenants do struggle for various reasons, and we're going to touch on those aspects there, so good timing for that, and obviously due to client demand, it's something that's been asked for. And secondly, right to rent, which has been a huge talking point over the last 18 months, in particular with the trial in the Midlands, and now as of the 1st of February, which is next week, all new tenancies after the 1st of February basically have to have a right to rent check throughout, which we're going to go into in detail. So in order to sum up a right to rent, it basically, the definition is the means allowed to occupy residential accommodation in the UK by virtue of qualifying immigration status. Sounds very technical, but trust me, the process is quite simple. I'm going to touch on key points, questions and answers if I haven't gone through any already, and I'm going to touch on a prize giveaway. So for those of you who can sustain myself rambling on for the rest of the webinar, I'm going to answer a pop question at the end. And for the first 10 people who respond to that question, we're going to have a prize giveaway. Okay. Okay, so jumping straight in, rent arrears. So I'm going to touch on managing rent arrears and best practice. Now, this is from our experience, from our in-house legal team, speaking to landlords, speaking to letting agents. We're going to delve into the whole process of the rent arrear, so it should be around about 7 to 8 minutes on this section, and I'm going to touch on some basic best practice points. A lot of them will probably seem as common sense, but a majority of landlords who we deal with do not go through this process or do not follow basic principles and are driven by emotions when it comes to rent arrears. Okay, so the most common causes for rent arrears. Now, this is based on our stats from 2015. So housing benefits, HB, not direct. So what I mean by that is local housing allowance or housing benefits, if you've got any types of tenants that fall into that category, whereby the rent is paid directly to them. And then they're meant to pass it on to the landlord by way of managing their money. So for some reason or another, they've spent it on, luxury holiday, TVs, going out, and basically they don't deem the rent as a priority. So that's a very common query for landlords calling into our free advice line. And then secondly, it's linked to that as well, is the 30th percentile rule and bedroom tax had a big knock-on effect to this, whereby tenants were originally receiving housing benefits, local housing allowance for X amounts. That was reduced based on their circumstances or the properties that we were in. So therefore, that left a shortfall. So that tenant therefore had to find that extra income from elsewhere and pay what we call a top-up. Now, that top-up obviously accumulates over time if you can't pay, so it becomes a top reason as well. A change of tenant circumstances is normally... it's normally to do with accident, sickness or unemployment. They're the main categories that we've got, but most recently, as you can imagine, over the Christmas break, a lot of couples spend a lot of time together, and the odd query has been coming through over that time. It seems to be seasonal, with Mr. and Mrs. splitting up and going in separate directions, and obviously one person cannot afford to pay the full share of the rent as one entity. So change of tenant circumstances is very popular, and most of the time, you can't really predict that one. You know, deal with it as best you can once it happens, but it's very hard to actually predict it. It's just what you when it comes to it in terms of controlling it. The third one, it still surprises me, but the tenants haven't been referenced at all or referenced properly. Now, a lot of private landlords who manage themselves, they could rely on a few bank statements, a chit chat to the prospective tenants, or having a quick call with previous references. But obviously, credit checks tell you a hell of a lot more, and you know, form the foundation of that check to be actually to be formed actually if it's actually quality or not, because there's a lot to take upon from that point onwards. 6 months up front or 12 months up front, then you're thinking, well, do I even need to reference this tenant whatsoever? They're paying me 6-12 months up front, great, but that could be, it could be issues in the potential future for that as well. Disrepair, it's probably the biggest problem that a landlord could potentially face or manage an agent. Disrepair, basically not repairing or maintaining the property to a great standard at all. You're leaving yourself very open there to potential risk and a delay in legal enforcement in the future. So disrepair is a huge topic to actually talk about. So they are the top four reasons that we had throughout the 2015, and they're still going to be common now coming into the future, but that's what we see as the common causes for rent arrears. Okay, so dealing with the rent arrears. So the most obvious one that we can suggest that you do is liaison with your tenants, or keeping up constant communication where possible. So if there's rent arrears or there's any information or anything that you need to know, you need to be basically directly on that or involved with the pulse. A lot of quality managing agents out there in the UK, you know, they correspond with tenants on a monthly basis. They'll phone them, thanking them for paying the rent, how's everything going. They'll send text messages to the tenant saying thank you for the rent, and just have a general chit-chat and a catch-up every single month. Some landlords may speak to a tenant once they've moved in and never speak to them again. And if they receive a phone call, it's generally, you know, the boiler's broken, or can you fix this, or can you do that? They won't say, you know, I'm struggling to pay the rent. Is there any chance I can delay it by a week or two? You know, how does that sound? I don't want you to obviously go down the legal route as soon as possible. So liaising with your tenants, I'd say, is a key in terms of opening up dialogue and communication. Now, some cases that is obviously not possible whatsoever, but in the majority of cases, I'd strongly advise that as a first port of call. Secondly, you've got to act immediately. And the reason why I've said that is, through our free advice line, the average landlord will act around about 12 to 13 weeks in the arrears, and that's when we receive the actual phone call. So 3 months has actually passed. So it's 3 months of not receiving rent, and 3 months of obviously paying the mortgage potentially on that property as well before actually reacting. So you have to really jump on this as soon as possible. And yes, you'll probably hear a large amount of excuses or reasons or whatever excuse. You know, we can be here all day saying, you know, payment plans, or, you know, my dog's eating my wallet, I can't go to the bank, I've swallowed my card, I'll arrange a payment plan. So there's various, obviously, reasons for that. But what I'd say is act immediately, open up dialogue, speak to the tenant, and just apply as much common sense as possible. And obviously, if there's a guarantor linked to it as well, then have a chat with the guarantor. And then eviction, I'd say, is the worst case scenario going down the legal route, because as you can imagine, it's becoming harder and harder, and the whole process is becoming longer and longer over the last 6 years. You know, the average eviction case from start to end, is around 5 to 6 months. So there's the, you know, there's the pre-court action letters at the beginning, then there's the Section 8s and Section 21s that you have to serve, and there's various reasons for them. Once they've expired, then it's going to court to get possession order, getting representation. Then potentially the tenant could still be in the property, and they have to go apply to bailiff stage, and then that whole process, 5 to 6 months, non-payment of rent, double payments of mortgage, and obviously a lot of legal fees unless you've got some sort of rent protection or legal policy or protection insurance covering that. So I would say eviction is definitely the worst case scenario, but sometimes you have to go down that route. If you can avoid it by liaising with your tenant, open up a good, great brand of communication and acting immediately, you could potentially limit the chances of going down the eviction route. However, eviction route may be the only option that you have. but the law has changed a lot over the years, and obviously there's a lot more legislation now in place, especially since the Deregulation Act came into place from October last year. So that is actually, we're seeing a lot of impact in that coming into place now with 6 month tenancies from that period onwards coming into place. But I haven't got a lot of time to talk about the Deregulation Act on that basis. However, we are looking to continue doing webinars in the future, and we believe that so far, based on consumer feedback, that the next topic could be on deregulation. So we'll try and make that as sexy as possible, even though it's legislation. Okay, so I'm going to touch on, to finish, some best practices on rent arrears. So, you know, these sound very obvious the way I'm going to go through them, but ensure that repairs are dealt with promptly and efficiently. You don't want to, you know, cut costs in terms of bodging up a repair job in a sink or a leak or any mould, because if it comes to down the eviction stage and there's any form of disrepair, and that's a reason for the tenant not paying, a disrepair case will actually hold a lot of weight in court if you are trying to then evict that tenant. And then disrepair can actually end up backfiring and costing the landlord a lot of money and delaying that eviction case. So any repairs, I'd say, get them repaired promptly and efficiently. Two, communicate with your tenant. Self-explanatory. Three, frequently inspections. I'm going to touch on this later from the right to rent perspective, but I'd say best practice-wise, within 3 months of the tenancy moving, an inspection should be carried out, and then, if possible, every 6 months thereafter. Point four was keeping great records, especially rent statements. You know, we see a hell of a lot of rent statements from landlords. It's just the bank accounts and every other transaction that they've got in the history. So what we would say is, you know, keep a standard Excel spreadsheet and record the rent coming in and actually the date that it's actually been received. And it, you know, it's a 10-minute job every single month. Point five is don't rent to friends and family. I'm not saying obviously never rent to friends and family. It's best advisable not to rent to friends and family, because it's a very common phone call that we receive as well from the free advice line for obvious reasons. And last point is don't issue a tenancy on a verbal agreement, which is obviously very easy to do. It could cause potential issues as well. Obviously, there's ways around that, but try to avoid tenancies on verbal agreements where possible. Always get signed tenancy agreements, deed of guarantors, everything all on the same documentation, and obviously get witnesses to be there and to sign it as well. Okay, the rent arrear section covered. So the most popular talking point at the moment is, of course, right to rent. And I'm going to cover in this next section what is right to rent and what are your responsibilities. So the whole thing, just to give you a bit of background, a bit of an overview. So it's estimated that there are over 100,000 illegal immigrants in the UK, and obviously the government have bestowed their power upon the whole private rented sector to act as potential border patrol employees, so to speak. Now, they don't want us to be experts in it, however they want us to be doing some sort of due diligence in order to prevent this and reduce this figure in the future. It's also anticipated that less than 1% may actually leave the UK due to right to rent, so it's not going to really have a massive impact. We've just got to ensure that we're doing our job correctly. They've also released a checklist of approved documentation, which we obviously all need to be familiar with, which we'll be going through as well. And the Home Office have built in a automated landlord check-in service system, which anybody can use if they're unsure, and it has a 48-hour turnaround, which is automated. And you just have to be very careful and meticulous in terms of the details that you're actually putting into the system, because a wrong spelling of a name will potentially give a different result and we could actually refuse that tenant. Okay, some further rules in terms of right to rent. In terms of checking the status, the liability is with the landlord ultimately, unless that managing agent will take the responsibility on. Now, all agents that we deal with will actually take that responsibility on. However, as a landlord, you have to check that it's basically in writing. And most quality letting agents across the UK will actually say they'll take responsibility of the right to rent checks. Fines can be up to £3,000 per tenant, and slightly less per lodger as a worst case scenario. And obviously, prison sentences have been mentioned as well, but for repeat offenders, we're yet to see a case of that, but you never know what the future could hold. All parties over the age of 18 named on the tenancy or not must be checked, and that includes lodgers as well. It has to be their main home in the UK. And then the last point, British citizens, EEA and Swiss nationals. So what I mean by EEA is the European Economic Area, which is a list of around 30 countries. So these chaps have the rights of abode in the UK, so they've been granted indefinite leave to remain or have no time limits on their stay in the UK. However, we'd say best practice, just check them anyway, check the passport, check the details, and I'll come on to further information which you can check on that point of view anyway, but best practice, it's worthwhile checking it for all tenants. Otherwise, we don't want that word discrimination being bandied about, because that's what this is potentially leaving us open to. Okay, so this slide is obviously pretty much long-winded, but this is the acceptable types of documentation that we can accept in terms of right to rent. So it's either one type of documentation from list A, or failing that, two types of documentation from list B. So it's pretty self-explanatory for all the documentation. There's reasons for every single type of documentation that you will have, depending on different age, to prove the age, obviously if they've been in prison, if they're waiting for a visa application to go through, and they'll have a biometric immigration document, or we're just generally checking the passport information. Okay. And the simple process to roll out would be obtain, check and copy. And this is what we've been trying to educate all our landlords and agents for. Obtaining a tenant's original acceptable documents that allow them to live in the UK as listed, so either list A or list B. Check the documents with the tenant face to face. Now, you don't have to be experts in checking this documentation, you just have to look at the information to see if it matches that person, say who it is, if it's not been tampered or forged in any way whatsoever. Three is copy and keep all documents on file and record the date of the check, and then retain this documentation for 12 months. And what the Home Office have actually said is they will not actually fine anyone if the documents presented have been professionally forged. And I was at a round table meeting with the Home Office, and they've thrown out 10 types of passports, UK passports, around the table. And the question was, can you spot a fraud here in that type of in out of all the passports? And not one person around the table could spot anything whatsoever. So they were all real passports. However, they've all been expertly forged in some way. And obviously to myself, who's not trained, and obviously to the majority of the industry who's not trained in terms of Border Patrol, it's going to be very hard for us to spot a professionally forged one. However, at least we know that there'll be no implications on us whatsoever. All we have to do is, and what the government are saying is, obtain the original documentation, check it all face-to-face, store and copy it, which you can put on our system as well, and retain it for at least 12 months. Okay, this is interesting points on this one. So the basis of this second point is, we've moved the tenant in, 12-month tenancy, X amount of time on the visa, for whatever the reason may be, what happens after that period? So obviously from the 1st of February, from the majority of the UK, apart from the Midlands, this will apply to everybody. 6 months onwards or 12 months onwards. So we have to follow up the checks. So 12 months from the last check or until the expiry of their right to be in the UK. So for example, and this was a question posed, I could be referencing and putting a tenant through with a 3-month visa, which is all legitimate. They've got a great job. The checklist and the documentation from A and B are fantastic. And they want a 12-month tenancy. So on that basis, the check would have to be on the latter, which would be the actual tenancy agreement. So even though they have a 3-month visa, and that could expire in month 4, and they have a 12-month AST, technically, what the government is saying in terms of the Home Office is that they still have the right to reside in that property. which is interesting. So we'll see how that pans out. Checks should be made in plenty of time before the expiry of excuse. So again, you're just going to have to refer back to list A or B and do those checks again. We're saying ballpark around 90 days prior, but that just obviously depends on the visa expiry date as well. So if you're unsure, you can still phone the Home Office, check on the application stage of things, or you can put through a application to check if it's ongoing or appeal on the visa via the landlord checking service. So you can do it by phone call, or you can actually do it by logging onto the system. And as I mentioned earlier, there's a 48-hour response on the landlord checking service for all tenants that may be that you may be querying in any way, shape, or form. Okay, so I think it's fairly straightforward. And there's been a lot of scaremongering in the industry over the last 6 months in terms of, you know, you could face fines, you could face penalties, you could face prison sentences. But the theory and the logic behind it is actually quite simple, which I hope you'll agree with as well. Okay, so just to reiterate the key points of obviously what I've gone through today so far is A is communication in respect of managing rent arrears. That you have to open that dialogue as soon as possible and don't just ignore it. B is apply commercial judgment. You know, the 2 points I want to mention that is obviously getting into this industry and becoming a landlord or becoming a managing agent. It's a business decision overall. It's not a personal decision. It's not speaking to your friend over borrowing them some money. You have to use your commercial judgment as best as possible. And secondly, property investment is a business. That's entirely what it is. It's a business, and that's how you have to treat it. Obviously, we can all get involved emotionally, but we have to have some commercial nous about us. If you're an amateur landlord or an accidental landlord who's inherited a couple of properties, or you're a professional landlord, that always has to stay with us. Or if you're a letting agent that manages several properties to several thousand properties, that aspect always has to be in the back of your mind. Three is robust systems and processes. Now, there's plenty of great agents out there, and obviously professional landlords who have got these robust systems in place already on the tenancy application stage, the pre-tenancy move-in packs, they're built into their systems. Some agents use really good CRM management systems who already have this in place as well. So what I'd say, if you haven't got these in place already, which is about to start next week, you need to, and obviously pretty fast as well, in order to roll these all out throughout your business. And then four, you need to have a system in place for conducting the follow-up checks. I think that's really important. You can't just get everything in place now, which is fantastic, and then in 3 months' time not do anything at all with the follow-up checks. So you have to build in a process and key reminders in terms of putting in follow-up checks as well, because I think that's what will really catch the industry out, to be honest. I think the first port of call could be okay, but conducting follow-up checks in the future, because somebody else could come in that property. You just never know. And then obviously what to do in and around that. You know, Mr. and Mrs. have moved in, but then mum and dad and brother and sister could come in as well at a later point. So follow-up checks, not only on the actual inspections, what I mean, I also mean in terms of landlord checking service as well, or any documentation from list A and B. Okay, so I've come to the end of the presentation, even though it felt like forever. There's a few questions I have, so feel free to ask any questions that you've got within the system. Just type them in. There is quite a lot of questions as well, so hopefully I've answered a couple of them as I've gone through. The first question I've got is, does a tenant have to be in 2 full months in arrears, or can it be part payments from different months? So yeah, it's a good question. It's a quite common one actually that we get asked. So as long as a total is 2 months, it doesn't matter if it's consecutive months or part payments from numerous months. So collectively, if it's 2 months in total, then obviously we can move forward with some sort of legal action. Obviously, we'd best advise on that basis. Let's pick another one. Can you include admin fees and late fees as rental arrears? No, we cannot. We can only take rent owed and nothing else whatsoever. Let's check another one. My tenant's rent was due yesterday and they haven't paid. Are they now in 1 month arrears? No, they're not, and that would be classed as it wouldn't be classed as arrears until the day before the next rent payment is due. That is a common misconception that obviously landlords, well, it's a great example of acting swiftly, but you have to act swiftly and you have to act with the correct information. I'll try and pick another arrears one. So can I use my tenant's deposit money against their arrears? Normally it's the other way around, where the tenant uses it against the arrears as well before they leave. But this can only be done if agreed in writing, I'd say, with the tenant. There also has to be an option should the landlord not have registered deposit correctly, and there's no arrears on the account. I've got time for a couple more. Chinese citizen, passport expired, and they're due to move in next week. Yeah, good question. Obviously pertinent to right to rent. What I would suggest is that we review all documents from list A and B. If we can't satisfy ourselves from list A, then we move on to list B. And again, if we can't satisfy ourselves from list B, or we can't obtain that information, then I'd suspect that they don't have the right to reside in the UK. And if that's the case, I'd refer them to the landlord check-in service. Wait 48 hours to get a response on that basis. And if they're not, then you'd have to report them to the Home Office, because obviously they could potentially be an illegal immigrant. Let's try and pick another one. How often should we conduct inspections? Yeah, I only touched on that briefly. I'd say that within the first 3 months of the tenant moving in, and it's very hard to build this into your inspection process, but I'd say be as vigilant as possible in terms of seeing if there are any other lodgers or tenants residing there also. It sounds ridiculous, but it's just common sense again. You're checking into any other footwear there, trainers, clothes. I remember one tenant agent saying to me that they actually went into the bathroom in Midlands and checked how many toothbrushes were actually there. So I wouldn't go as far as that, but you have to be vigilant. You apply and apply common sense. It's just ticking all the boxes compliance-wise in order to mitigate any risk. And then every 6 months thereafter, within reason if possible, based on a letting agent having that capacity or a landlord having that actual time. Right, I think I've answered about six or seven there. I've got another 16, 17 questions there. I haven't got time to go through them all. However, for all of those who have asked questions that I haven't answered, I will endeavour to get back to them, by close of play tomorrow. Okay. Okay, quick prize giveaway. So, if you're unsure of a tenant's right to rent status, what is your first port of call? So for anyone typing that in on the response, the first tenant that typed that in on the response side of things, hopefully you've all been listening, we'll obviously enter our prize draw. And the prize draw will be the first tenant actually who answer that question. We'll be giving them a free pre-call action letter to use as a credit at any time as a worst case scenario in order to start or mitigate legal services. Okay, I've had seven through so far. Eight, nine. I'm waiting on one more. Yeah, I've got the 10th one through. Okay, thanks a lot. Okay, and then just to wrap this up now, if there's any further information, obviously feel free to call our free advice line. We also have a mobile free number as well, but I'll give you the landline number. It's 0800 840 7133. Or you can email into advice@legalforlandlords.co.uk. I think the majority of you have that information already. I'll also be following up with a personal email tomorrow to everybody as well. So there's two documents I do want to send out. One is our own checklist that we've created, which is a simple one page, which will obviously help you with any right to rent and checks in the future. And also a lovely document that the Home Office have produced on right to rent, which is about 25 pages long, which is very detailed and will give you a lot of fun bedtime reading. So once again, I want to say thank you for everyone who attended this the webinar, the first one to kick off the year. I hope it's been useful for everybody. And obviously, by all means, any questions, just feel free to respond back to my email tomorrow. And yeah, we'll get back to absolutely everybody. But thanks a lot. Good evening. And for those who enjoy football, let's see who wins tonight. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.